Hello and welcome to our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology video on macronutrients protein. Protein is one of the macronutrients, and we're going to talk about structure and function and how that applies clinically to your clients in helping them to achieve vibrant health and overcome issues that arise when protein becomes out of balance. So before we begin, let's talk about the fact that this is not medical advice. This is just a sharing from my information to you, from my research and from my clinical experience, and to make sure that when you're working with clients that you let them know that you're not diagnosing, you're not treating, you are assessing their status, their nutritional status, and helping them with lifestyle and diet things that they can change. So we've been talking about macronutrients in this module, and there's the four primary macronutrients that we've covered: water, fat, and now we're moving into protein, and after that we'll go into carbohydrate. And these are the macronutrients. These are the nutrients, remember, that we need in big amounts, like, you know, a couple of several quarts of water every day, multiple grams of fat every day, protein, maybe 60 to 80 grams, depending on your size and your activity level. Carbohydrates, you know, there's no amount, but generally we're going to get in the neighborhood of, you know, 100 grams-ish. Well, if we're on a low carbohydrate diet, we may go lower than that. If we're not, we'll go a little bit higher. But those are big gram doses versus vitamins and minerals, where we need milligram and sometimes even microgram doses. So little teeny, teeny, tiny doses. So these are the macronutrients, and those are the micronutrients. And we'll get to those later. So protein's a biggie. You know, we have a lot of people are worried about their protein. And whenever I hear this, I have to laugh, because people all the time will look at me and they'll say, "Where do you get your protein? Oh, you can't survive eating plants." And I eat only plants. Some people eat primarily plants. I think it's very healthful to eat primarily plants, because that's where we get most of our nutrition from. But if you eat a little bit of meat, you're going to get more protein in a little bit of meat. But if you eat a lot of plants, you're still going to get a lot of protein. But it's really funny, because the people that are asking, they're just so concerned about my nutrition, they're not so healthy themselves. And, you know, I run, I bike, I swim, I have lots of energy, I build muscle, and I don't eat anything but plants. So where do you get your protein? Is this crazy thing? Like, everything has protein in it, not just meat, not just beans, but everything. And actually, kale and spinach and broccoli are in the 40 to 50% protein. Now, granted, they don't have very many calories, so you have to eat a lot of them, but it's not that hard. It really isn't. You just have to pay attention. But people who eat a vegetarian diet and focus on eating just a lot of grains and pasta and fruit and stuff don't get a lot of protein and run the risk of being protein deficient. But it's been said that it's impossible to have a protein deficient diet if you're eating whole foods, no matter what it is, whether you're, you know, a heavy duty meat eater, whether you're doing a lot of grains and beans, or whether you're doing a lot of vegetables. As long as you're getting a calorie sufficient diet that has a balance. And it's really impossible if you're eating enough calories to not get enough, unless it's all fruit, if you're just eating all fruit or you're eating junk. But I'm saying a whole foods diet. So it's really not something to worry about. And a lot of your clients are going to be worried about it. And you're going to have to show them charts. And it's easy enough to do. And you can have them run their diets through fitday.com or other online free services and just show them, hey, look, you don't really have to worry about this. And then some people do have to be concerned about their protein intake, because they're eating the standard American diet, which is loaded with what? Processed food, lots of sugar. No protein in sugar, thank you very much. So, you know, just really watch that. So let's look at what we're going to cover today. A lot. We're going to cover some chemistry, but don't get scared. We're going to look at what protein really is, how to resolve the dilemma of too much versus too little protein, because there's a lot of misconceptions about that. How to determine if you're low in protein. What are some of the signs? What are the food sources of protein, and how much is in each of those? Do we need protein powders versus whole food proteins? And I really want to go through when protein powders can be a really good idea to help supplant it, and how and when to consume them, and what's good protein powders versus not so good protein powders. So there's a lot we're going to cover. So what's the function of protein? Protein is your structure. It composes your muscles, your ligaments, your tendons, your hair, your skin, your nails, all those things that you can see, feel, hear, and touch. So also, they're the components, they're enzymes. Enzymes are made of protein. So enzymes are required for metabolic reactions, for digestion, for the immune system, for hormones, for pretty much everything, detoxification, big time. We need protein to make our hormones. We also need fats to make our hormones. So we need to have that balance. Proteins transport things. They transport hormones around the bloodstream. We have these binding proteins that attach hormones, because most hormones are fats, right? And they don't dissolve in the blood. They can't really be transported in the blood. They need to be bound to proteins to be carried in the blood. Energy intermediates. So in the Krebs cycle, there's a lot of amino acids required to generate energy. And we talked about that in our cell metabolism module. Also, growth and repair. So if you're going to be taking tissue or muscle, or you're injured or broken bone, or even just metabolic responses, lifting weights, you're going to need proteins for growing and repairing. And growth and repair happen all day long, every day, but especially while you sleep. Proteins are important for neurotransmitters. The bases of all the neurotransmitters are various amino acids, and we'll be going through those. And proteins are required to maintain pH balance. If you don't have enough protein, your balance can go off. But also, if you have too much protein, your pH balance can go skewed in the direction of acidity. So those are all the things that proteins are important for. So what does protein look like? Well, it looks like a bunch of carbons and hydrogens and oxygens, and different from fats and carbs, which also have a lot of proteins and hydrogens and carbons. They have some other molecules. They have nitrogen, and that's what distinguishes protein from carbohydrates and fats. They also have other groups. These R's that you're seeing throughout are little side chains, and some of them have phosphate, some of them have sulfur. We have a lot of things besides hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon like we have in our fats and carbohydrates. So let's look at what is protein. What does it look like? What is it made up of? The vital components of body tissue, of your enzymes, of your immune cells, and they account for about 20% of your body weight. Unlike water, which accounts for probably 60 to 80% of your body weight. The combination of a bunch of different amino acids are linked together in very unique combinations containing carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, just like fats and carbs, but in addition, nitrogen and sometimes sulfur, and also some phosphates. Deficiencies in essential amino acids causes your body to have to break down muscle protein and sometimes vital organ protein. So if you're not getting enough amino acids, you definitely have to break down. So if you're on an extended fast, that's a period of time when you're not getting enough protein coming in, you're going to be breaking down muscle tissue. So what are amino acids? Well, they're the building blocks of protein. They're biologically important organic compounds. They consist of an amine group, which is nitrogen and two hydrogens, NH2. That's called an amine group. They also have a carboxylic group, COOH. So we have an NH2 group, we have a COOH, and then we have a side chain that's specific to each amino acids. The R is the side chain. And then we have the key elements that are in there, which are carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and sometimes sulfur and other things. There you go. There's your basic amino acid structure. It's going to be a longer chain generally in the middle, but basically it's the carbon, the hydrogen, the side chain right in the middle, the NH2 over to one side, the COOH over to the other side. That's the basic structure. That's the mystery of what amino acids are. That's all they are. That's what they are. So here's a list of the 9 essential amino acids. And like we talked about with essential fats, just because an amino acid isn't considered essential doesn't mean it's not essential to your life. So we got to get that straight. essential means it has to be coming into the diet because your body cannot make it. No matter how many other amino acids you have, for these 9, we just can't make them. Okay? Doesn't mean the other of the 22 amino acids aren't important. They are. And if you don't have enough of the essentials, you're not going to be able to make the others. So leucine, isoleucine, and valine, those are often called your branch chain amino acids, and they're able to be broken down into fuel. Lysine, methionine, tryptophan, phenylalanine, threonine, and histidine. So those they are. There's pictures of them here. Do you have to memorize them all? No. Do I have them all memorized? No. If you were to show me an amino acid, would I be able to look at it and say, oh, that's valine, or that's glutamic acid? No. That's not the important piece. And if you've taken a chemistry class, you've had to memorize that, that's fine. What we're looking is more you to understand the chemistry, the structure, and the function. Then we have a list that's called conditionally essential amino acids, that sometimes they are essential if we don't have enough of the building blocks. So arginine, asparagine, glutamine, glycine, proline, serine, tyrosine, and cysteine. We're going to talk about the functions of the various amino acids and where they play into the body so that you know what a deficiency of that might look like. Let's look at the non-essential amino acids. This means that, you know, we generally don't need to have these in the diet. Our body's able to make them as long as there's an abundant supply of essential amino acids, plus a chemical called alpha-ketoglutarate and vitamin B6 that synthesizes it, okay? If you've ever done a lab test, you know there's a bunch of things called ALT, alanine leucine transferase, and there's a bunch of transferase enzymes that take groups off one amino acid and move it to another and create a new one, okay? B6, very important vital nutrient for that to happen. So let's look at the amino acids that are neurotransmitter precursors. Well, which ones are those? So phenylalanine and tyrosine, those guys get together and form dopamine. Tryptophan, glutamic acid, and GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. GABA is actually a neurotransmitter, but it's also considered an amino acid, as glutamic acid is a neurotransmitter, but it's also an amino acid. Okay. Then we have collagen-related amino acids. We have proline, hydroxyproline, glycine, and arginine. These form the basis of the collagen structure in the body. The collagen structure is the musculature, the joint tissue, anything that's structurally holding you together. So if you're working with somebody who has some muscle injury or bone injury, they may need more of these collagen-related amino acids in order to build back and recover from the injury. They're also going to need some vitamin C, because vitamin C is important for taking these amino acids and creating the synthesis of collagen. Then we have the sulfur-containing amino acids. And sulfur is an important component in the body for cleansing and detoxification. We have methionine and cysteine and homocysteine and cystathionine and taurine. Those are your sulfur-containing amino acids. Next, we have the energy-producing amino acids. We've got isoleucine and leucine and valine, which are considered your branch-chain amino acids. 30% of muscle protein and 50% of dietary amino acids is embraced in this. So they're really important, and you need a lot of these. And I've had worked with people therapeutically with using these, not only in helping them with increasing their energy and sparing their lean muscle, but in terms of some very significant issues. And there's a lot of research around isoleucine, leucine, and valine, and some work with some neurological symptoms. Histidine is important for energy, and it's usually high when you're breaking down a lot of muscle. So if somebody's in the process of doing a lot of heavy-duty workout where they're lifting really heavy weight and there's a lot of muscle breakdown and then rebuilding, they may be requiring more histidine, right? Or if they're in the process where they're in a process of cancer or some sort of a disease state where the muscle and the tissue is breaking down. You find that histidine levels are low in people with rheumatoid arthritis. Lysine causes the collagen cross linkages. It helps with those, so it's really important for building tissue. And then threonine. And low levels of threonine can actually be contributory to hypoglycemia. So it's really important to have amino acid balance, not only for the structural things, but for some of the functional things in the body. So let's take a look at too little protein and too much protein, and what's the cause of each, and what's the manifestation of each. Too little protein, person might have low energy. They may have poor immune function, like the healing that doesn't happen, or more tendency towards infectious disease. They could have hormone imbalance, and that can range from thyroid, adrenal, insulin levels. It could be related to female and male hormones. It could be related to hormones in very many parts of the body, because they make, that's the structural component of making the hormones. Too little protein can lead to depression. Can also lead to muscle weakness, right? If you don't have enough protein to build good muscle, the muscles are going to be weak. Weak, brittle nails. If you see those people, they say, I just can't grow my nails. They grow, they grow, they break, they grow, they break. Possibly protein, also possibly mineral deficiency. Hair that thins or falls out can be lack of protein. But again, that could be other things, right? Low thyroid function, low adrenal function can create a loss of hair. Poor recovery from injury, so we don't have the raw materials that the body needs to repair and build new collagen tissue, that can be a manifestation of too little protein. And if you have somebody who can't, they're lifting weights, they're doing all these workouts, and they just don't seem to be able to build, the muscles aren't growing, they're not getting any stronger, that's a sign. You know, somebody says, I just try to do these push-ups, and every day I get to 4 push-ups, I can't get further than 4 push-ups. They're not building the strength. You know, whereas somebody that has plenty of protein, like if I try to do push-ups and I haven't been doing them for a while, after I broke my arm and I hadn't done push-ups in many long time, I got down and did 12 push-ups the first day back. And then, you know, within a week I was able to do 20, and now I'm able to do 30 or 40 if I keep it up. If I don't, then I go back down, right? Because it's a build-up. But I wouldn't say that I have a deficiency of protein, because I'm able to build up the bulk and the strength if I do the work. If you have too much protein, it puts a stress on your kidneys, and that can lead to low back pain, and that can lead to kidney stress and kidney failure and poor clearance rate. It can lead to bone loss, because too much protein creates nitrogenous waste and acidic waste, and it causes bone to be broken down in order to neutralize and alkalize. It can create decreased appetite. It's just one of those things that if you have too much protein, it causes you to decrease your appetite. And people find that they do this when they're trying to lose weight. They'll load up on the protein. Well, it's fine, because it decreases their appetite and they may lose weight. But on the other hand, they're causing a lot of nitrogenous waste, stress on the kidney, and bone loss. It can be nauseous. People have too much protein sometimes. It's not all the time. Acidic urine and saliva, very common with too much protein. So if you're having somebody test their urine and their saliva and they're getting very acidic readings, even though you're having them eat more greens or taking some alkalizing minerals, it could be that they're just getting too much protein. And a lot of people err on this side. They go, oh yeah, I can't go on carbs because the carbs are no good for me because I have blood sugar problems. So they go and they eat too much protein. And that can be problematic. Like people who are, you know, taking paleo diets to the extreme. You know, paleo diets, if done properly, can be really healthy, where it's eaten the way it was in Paleolithic times, where there was a feast of meat and then there was a famine and it was mostly greens and vegetation and whatever was around. But when you start to eat like, you know, 6-8 ounces of meat at every meal, you can be running into some really serious issues with kidney and overload there. Dehydration can amount from too much protein. You can have constipation because there's just not enough fiber, and the protein is just it's slowing down the transit time and causing constipation. And increased risk of cancer and heart disease has been attributed to too much protein, and specifically too much in the way of animal protein. But you know, certainly plant protein, excessive soy can create those risks. So we've got to really watch out for that. So we're going to come back in the next video and we'll continue with the protein. And we've given you some basics now, and now it's time to move to the next level. Thanks for sharing, and we'll see you on the next video.